Welcome to this episode of Sleep Health under the Restonic Power of Sleep podcast. I'm Dr. Alison Bentley from the Restonic Essentia Sleep Clinic in Johannesburg. This month it's October, and October is Mental Health Month. And so this podcast is really going to talk about the relationship between sleep and poor sleep and mental health. And for mental health, we're really focusing on the big disorders such as anxiety, depression. But you'll also see that as we talk about sleep and lack of sleep, how just fatigue and not wanting to do anything and not feeling good about yourself can also be included in that segment of mental health. So it's about how we feel about each other and how we feel about ourselves and how ready we are to face the day and how well we cope during the day. Let's start with anxiety and depression. I think most people know what they are. Anxiety, feeling as though you can't cope, feeling as though your head is running, that you can't pull things together, that you're anxious about nothing really, but it just kind of takes over your life. Anxiety can do. And that includes panic attacks. So that's included in anxiety. Depression, two real kind of differences in depression. Every definition of depression that you look at will have a component of insomnia, that there's a sleep disturbance associated with the mood. And depression generally is a mood where you don't feel like doing anything. Nothing brings you joy anymore. You don't feel like interacting with people. And often that is a very debilitating sensation and mood. But there's also another type of sleep disorder that you can get with depression, and that is excessive sleeping. So most patients who have depression will have insomnia, that is too little sleep. But a small percentage, 20 to 30% of patients with depression, will just want to sleep all the time. And so escape the world, go to bed, and just stay there. And so we need to acknowledge that there are these two different types of sleep disorder. So when we look at sleep and how sleep is related to these disorders, it's very tricky because it's a chicken and egg kind of scenario. And what I mean by that is that if you have depression and anxiety, as I mentioned, sleep disorders are part and parcel of the definition, and you pretty much every patient who has depression and anxiety has some type of sleep disorder. But now what we know is that if you have one of the sleep disorders from any cause, so if you have insomnia from any cause, the risk of having depression and anxiety increases, and often for the rest of your life, what we call a lifelong risk, increased risk of getting depression. And that's even something as simple as not sleeping well during exams at varsity. So one of the key studies that showed this was a study that was done in doctors in the United States, doctors who graduated from Harvard in about 1965. And when they graduated, they filled in a questionnaire, as always happens. So whenever you're looking, let's ask them questions, see what their university experience was like, and then track them down. And of course, it's quite easy to track down doctors because they have to register to practice. Track them down up to 35 years later and ask them how they were doing and answered, gave them the same kind of question. And two of the questions in that original questionnaire when they finished varsity was about, did they battle to sleep during exams? So basically asking them, did the anxiety of the exam period influence your sleep in any way? And those that said yes to that question, and it's not everybody, so not everybody gets that kind of response to exams, but those who answered yes were found to have an increased risk of depression even up to 35 years later. So that was a marker for the risk of depression. So that's why I mean it's a chicken and egg thing. So if you're depressed, you're likely to have insomnia. But if you have insomnia, you're likely to get a future depression. And so it's tricky often to understand which came first. And sometimes we have long conversations with patients about, are you sure the depression came first? Also, there are many patients who will visit doctors with insomnia. And what they call depressive symptoms, and that's because of the insomnia, and it's often very difficult to try and untangle, is the feeling that they have during the day, the poor mood, not wanting to do anything, the fatigue they have, is that from an underlying depression or is that from a sleep disorder? So we'll kind of untangle all of that as we go through. We're also not going to limit this conversation to insomnia because we're also going to talk about sleep apnea and other disorders of sleep that cause a poor quality of sleep and what is their relationship to these mood disorders. So let's start off very basically with the function of sleep. I mean, why do we need to sleep? And basically what we do, so in a very brief explanation, which is obviously very simplified, what we do when we sleep is we service the car. So this car of our brain and our body, we service the car. And unlike our cars, where we can service every 15,000 kilometers, This car of our body needs to be serviced every night. And if we underservice the car, so either by not having enough hours of sleep, so if we meant to have 7 hours and we only have 6 hours, or if we have poor quality sleep because we have sleep apnea or we have periodic leg movements during night. So we have enough hours, but we wake up tired. So there's not a sense that we have had a refreshing sleep. So either of those two scenarios, we are underservicing the car. Now we might be servicing it by 70% and we might be able to get through the day, but we are 30% under. And if the next night you're also 30% under and the next night you're also 30% under, that you can understand that over a shorter period of time, shorter than it should be, that car is going to break down. When it comes to our body, it breaks down differently and it breaks down in an area in which we are compromised. And we often don't know that we are compromised in that area. So for example, some people are more likely to get heart disease. Some people are more likely to get diabetes. But overall, the car is going to break down faster. Now, some of the general things that we know that if you underservice the car, the next day it's not going to perform as well. So it doesn't take a long time to have a consequence. There are going to be consequences the next day. More importantly, however, for us, in those of us in sleep medicine, is that there are long-term consequences, so over 10, 15 years, if this doesn't get resolved. So let's start with the immediate consequences. We know that if you don't sleep properly, you're going to wake up tired. And if you're tired, long before you actually fall asleep during the day, so that's people say, but I'm not falling asleep during the day. Yeah, you don't have to fall asleep during the day. By then, you're really, really underservicing. So you've gone for quite a while with not good quality or not enough hours to actually fall asleep during the day. But what happens first is that you start to not function well. So when we look at how the brain functions during the day, what are the first signs that you are not getting enough sleep? Now, it's important that there are other reasons why these things might happen, but these are signs of sleep deprivation. How do we know? Because we took normal sleepers and we cut off an hour of their sleep, and then we looked at how they functioned during the day on tasks. And this is what they found. And it's quite a long list. I'm just going to read through the list, but I just want you to think about whether this applies to you. So, avoiding distraction. If you are trying to study, for example, and you are short of sleep, it's harder to do all of these hard tasks. And we tend to go, oh, I'm sure there's something really important on Facebook that I need to look at because that is easier. So it's harder for us to focus on hard tasks. It's harder for us to keep track of events and update strategies. So like where we are in a sequence of events. So ability to remember the event sequence. So I'm sure many of you have been very tired and tried to do something that has a sequence of events. And if you get distracted halfway through, you've no idea where you were in the sequence. So I always use the example of baking. Not that I bake a lot, but an example of baking where you have a whole bunch of white stuff to stick in a bowl. And if you get distracted, then you go, I can't remember if I put that white stuff in the bowl. And so that kind of thing, like those kinds of not being able to focus on what you're actually doing and keep that, what we call working memory, in your head. Then there's things like thinking laterally and being innovative. And I think it's really important. Like a lot of jobs nowadays depend on that kind of thing, that your job is to think laterally. Certainly my job is. I get patients in and I have to be able to think laterally and be innovative. And what are we going to do and how are we going to solve this problem? Problem solving is a problem when you haven't slept well. Then effective communication. I mean, you know that if you're tired, you're grumpy and your tolerance level is low, so that you don't tolerate fools very well. You don't tolerate people who maybe annoy you very well. So communication tends to go down, even communication with your family. Then we go into assessing risk. You're not able to assess the risk properly. You're not able to maintain an interest in the outcome of what you're doing. Then there's controlling mood and uninhibited behavior. So we know particularly in children, if they're tired, they start going a little crazy. And so they're not able to control their behavior and adults are not able to control their mood. And that's obviously really important when we're talking about mental health. And then showing insight into your own performance, like what you're actually able to do. What's really interesting is if you look at some of those, so if you pick a few of them, for example, assessing risk, maintaining interest in outcome, and showing insight into your own performance. That sounds very much like people who've been drinking alcohol. And that is exactly the consequence of drinking alcohol and exactly why you can't drive if you have taken alcohol, because it takes away all of those particular factors or those particular outcomes. And so you have a situation where you don't really care about what happens. You think you're fabulous and you're not assessing the risk properly. And so we do things that shouldn't be done. And they have actually looked at, is there a similarity between the amount of sleep deprivation that one might have and alcohol levels? And in fact, the level of alcohol, which would stop you driving, so the legal limit of alcohol in the blood, is equivalent, the function you have at that level of alcohol is equivalent to about 21 hours of sleep deprivation. So that is equivalent to waking up at 6 in the morning, at 3 the next morning, you are functioning as if you are legally drunk. So it's really important that there's quite a common theme here, that what alcohol does and what sleep deprivation do is a similar kind of thing. So these are all, and remember, if you look at that list, these are all things that you need in work or in school or in just your daily function. These are things that you need. And often because of fatigue, you get a knockoff in these functions, but you often blame it on something else and not necessarily your sleep. So these are all really, really important. Now, there's no question that if we then look at long-term consequences of any sleep disorder, they can be anything. And it really just depends on you and your genetic kind of predisposition. So we know that the big ones are cardiovascular disease, obesity. Every single sleep disorder has been linked to an increase in BMI, an increase in weight, which might be still within the normal zone, but you are likely to put on weight if you have a sleep disorder or you're not sleeping well. But then with that obesity, if it goes into obesity, with that obesity comes all the other kinds of problems with obesity, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, metabolic dysfunction, et cetera, et cetera. But things like sleep apnea particularly have been linked to things like dementia, liver disease, and, you know, random things that you always kind of go, I don't know if this is really linked, but things like floppy eyelid syndrome, that's a thing. So sleep apnea can cause that. So there really is quite a big push now to look at the sleep disorders and to look at these other disorders, which now seem to happen earlier in life if you have a sleep disorder. So if you were prone to get diabetes in when you were 65 and you have a full-blown sleep disorder, it may now happen at 55. So though all of those big disorders tend to happen earlier, and so you are living longer with disease, and that's never a good thing. So that's why we are so why it's so important to us that we look at sleep and we look at mental health together. Because one of the long-term problems, as I mentioned before, is depression. That all of the sleep disorders are likely to increase the risk of depression in future. Now, let's look at the individual sleep disorders, and we're going to look at the two. And the one is about quantity of sleep, dropping quantity of sleep. And the other one is about quality of sleep. So if we look at dropping quantity of sleep, that's insomnia. And that's the one that is most clearly linked to mental health. So the definition of insomnia is not that you don't sleep at all. This is what patients tell me. And I go, no, that's not insomnia. Insomnia means that you get too little sleep for your daytime function. So every person with insomnia has less sleep than they need, and there's a compromise during the day. If you're not compromised during the day, then you are getting enough sleep, even if the number of hours doesn't seem to fit the norm. And here we need to be very careful that 7 to 8 hours per night is not the normal. It's the average amount of sleep for a population. And you may be somebody who only needs 6 or 5. There's not many of them. There's about 5% of the population need less than 7 to 8 hours, but you may only need 6. So if you get 6 hours of sleep and you function very well during the day, then you're probably okay. What we're talking about here are patients who need 7 and are only getting 5.5. And there's that hour and a half lacking at night, and that hour and a half compromises them during the day. So they feel tired, they feel grumpy, they have what we call depressive symptoms, so they don't have depression necessarily, but they are grumpy and they don't want to do stuff and they're tired and they sit around and they avoid social activity and they avoid exercise. And so their lives become worse because of the sleep restriction that they have. So that's insomnia. There has to be a daytime dysfunction and there has to be a drop in hours. Now, those hours can be lost at various points in the night. Often it's at the beginning of the night, so patients who go to sleep and then battle to fall asleep and can spend an hour or an hour and a half trying to fall asleep. So it can be there, what we call sleep onset. The hour and a half can happen in the middle of the night, so what we call middle insomnia. And that's often how that presents, is often patients will sleep for 3 or 4 hours, what we call the core sleep. And that's often very, very difficult to interrupt the core sleep. So you will generally, once you fall asleep, will generally have 3 to 4 hours, but then you wake up and often spend a long time then trying to go back to sleep again. Or it can happen at the end of the night, in that you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning instead of 6 o'clock, and then it's very difficult to go back to sleep at that point. So what there are gaps in your night, and you are missing out on sleep. Really important to just mention that the middle insomnia, so being able to fall asleep, waking up at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, let's say, and then having difficulty going back to sleep, is quite a classic symptom of depression. It is not the only kind of sleep disorder that happens in depression, but certainly that is the one kind of type of sleep disorder that has been linked mostly to depression. So it is, that one's particularly important. So insomnia, we have a loss of hours of sleep linked to daytime dysfunction, as I've mentioned. Now, there's different types of insomnia. So we have acute insomnia, we have secondary insomnia, and then we have chronic insomnia, which is now called insomnia disorder. And I'll explain a little bit more about that in a little while. But let's start with acute insomnia. Many people have acute insomnia. Up to 10 to 20% of a population will have acute insomnia in 1 year. Because it's triggered by stress. It's triggered by a life stress event. So if you move house, you're likely not to sleep well a couple of nights before you move, and then a couple of nights afterwards, possibly. If you write exams, as I've mentioned, if there's a death in the family, so any kind of life psychological stress event can trigger off insomnia, but so can a physical event. If you break your leg and you're like put in hospital and you're in a lot of pain and you're stuck in hospital and you're in traction or you're in plaster or you've just had an operation or whatever that is, you're not going to sleep well. And so that's an acute insomnia. So physical events, the beginning of a medical disorder, so beginning of depression, beginning of anxiety, beginning of arthritis with pain, etc. All of those medical events can cause an acute insomnia. Now, acute just means it just starts. All of these things are what we call a precipitating event. So the precipitating event starts this insomnia. So previously you slept well, boom, all of a sudden don't sleep well. And it can be any combination of not falling asleep, waking up in the middle of the night, waking up early. That doesn't change. What it is there's a clear cause for the insomnia. And when you have this type of insomnia, the acute insomnia, you are lying in bed and you go, I can't sleep because of this. There's a very clear link to what the cause is of insomnia. That can last 3 days in the case of exams. It can last a couple of weeks. But it can go on to become a more chronic form. And about 25% of people who have an acute event like this will go on to have chronic insomnia. So it's really important to manage this acute insomnia and get rid of it and to treat it properly. And treatment often in this case would be with some kind of sleeping tablet, 5 nights of a sleeping tablet. Please don't worry, you're not going to get hooked on it in 5 nights. But what it is going to do is allow you to sleep properly and therefore manage whatever the issue is that is causing the insomnia better. Then after about 5 nights, you should be able to stop and hopefully go back to your normal sleep. So that's acute insomnia. I don't often see patients with acute insomnia. Most patients will go to their GP with acute insomnia. But please get help, because it's very difficult to manage the underlying condition if you're not sleeping as well. Those two don't do well together. Then let's deal with secondary insomnia, because again, this whatever disorder actually started the insomnia in the first place can continue. So for exams, it's a very self-limiting thing. It's going to be 3 or 4 days and then you're going to be fine. But if it's something like arthritis or at the beginning of depression, it can take quite a while to get the medication right to manage that particular disorder. And so 3 or 4 months may go by where you're trying to manage this original disorder and not sleeping well. And so if it continues past a couple of days to 7 to 10 days, if it continues and it just seems to be continuing after that, but still caused by something, so you're still very aware that you're waking up in the middle of the night in pain, then that is what we consider to be secondary insomnia. And there's lots of things that can cause secondary insomnia, including medications. As I've mentioned, medical disorders, there are lots of medications that can interfere with sleep. And remember, when we say can interfere with sleep, we're not saying they will. there's a percentage of people who take this medication who will have a problem with insomnia. And that percentage for the different medications can be as low as 5 or 10%. So please don't look at the package insert and go, oh, it causes insomnia. It may not cause insomnia at all in you. So that's really important. Now, when we look at the kind of disorders, it's really important to understand that secondary insomnia occurs in the big mental disorders or the mood disorders. So anxiety and depression, those two big disorders, insomnia and sleep occurs because of them. So if you get depressed, you are likely to get insomnia. If you have anxiety, you are likely to get insomnia. And just with every single secondary cause of insomnia, if you do not treat the underlying problem, i.e. treat the depression, or treat the anxiety, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to manage the insomnia on its own. So you need to go and see somebody about the depression. You need to see somebody about the anxiety. Really don't self-medicate either of those two. So particularly for the anxiety, don't self-medicate with alcohol because it very quickly becomes a problem. You become very tolerant to the alcohol very quickly. If you use alcohol to try and sleep, it's not going to work very quickly. So that glass of wine that you might be taking to help you sleep because you're anxious quickly turns into half a bottle of wine every night, not because you're enjoying it, but just because you need to glug it back like a medicine. When that starts turning into half a bottle of whiskey, then that's a real, real problem because the consequences of alcohol are way beyond just this tolerance that's occurring. So please, if you think you have depression or anxiety, please go and speak to a doctor about that. It's really important that even if you treat the depression and anxiety, it doesn't necessarily mean that the insomnia is going to resolve itself. Because after months and months and months of depression and anxiety, you may have developed insomnia disorder as well. And I'll speak about that in a moment. So if you don't treat the original disorder, you're unlikely to be able to treat the insomnia. But if you do treat the underlying disorder, there may still be insomnia there. And so that may need to be treated independently. So it's tricky. This relationship between mood disorders, so depression and anxiety, and sleep disorders is tricky. So let's look at chronic insomnia and insomnia disorder. So insomnia that goes on for more than 3 months at a time used to be called chronic insomnia. And that has its usefulness as a name, but really what it implied is that whatever was causing the insomnia in the acute phase, so whatever was precipitating the insomnia, was the reason why the insomnia was continuing, often for months, years, decades. We now know that that's not true. And many patients have said that to me. They've said, it started when my dad died, but I'm over that and I don't understand why I still can't sleep. So the chronic insomnia was a bad name because it implied that the reason why you couldn't sleep was still because of your dad dying or whatever started it in the first place. But we now know that's not true. We now know that chronic insomnia, so insomnia that's lasted for 3 months or more, and it's a bit of an arbitrary line, but that's the definition that we have created, that insomnia lasts for 3 months or more is an independent problem. It is keeping itself going. There is often nothing that is actually keeping it going. There's nothing that's causing it. And in the definition of chronic insomnia is you actually have to go, there is no pain, there is no depression, there is no anxiety, there's nothing actually causing this insomnia. It is just there. And again, that's often what patients will say to me. They'll say, look, I'm not worried about anything. I mean, everyone has worries, but I'm not lying in bed worrying about the financial situation. I'm worried about my kids. I'm not worried about my work. I'm not worried about this. I'm not worried about the next thing. I just can't sleep. So, and that's a really important point because we can deal with a lot of other stuff, depression, anxiety, medical problems that are causing sleeplessness. But then often patients get left with this insomnia, which just seems to keep itself going. And that, in fact, is exactly what it is. So I mentioned that the acute insomnia is what we call precipitating events. When we come to this situation where the insomnia just seems to be there and not resolving itself, we start talking about perpetuating factors. So perpetuating factors are factors that are keeping it going now. And they come in two types. So the one is behavioral factors, and that is often what patients do when they are battling to sleep, is they try to deal with these with this difficulty in sleeping in two ways. Firstly, they go to bed earlier. So let's spend more time in bed because firstly, I'm tired and I want to go to bed earlier. But secondly, maybe I will get more sleep if I spend more time in bed. So you can get patients who normally would sleep 7 hours a night and are now spending 9 hours in bed trying to get that 7 hours. And I can tell you now it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It seems like a good idea, but it just doesn't work. Because if your brain is designed to get 7 hours of sleep and you spend 9 hours in bed, you will spend 2 hours awake. And not only that, when you spend 2 hours awake, you're going to turn that into 4 hours of panic. So it's really just never works. The other thing that we do as a behavioral thing is if we can't sleep, we lie in bed and we stay in bed and we lie there and we try to sleep. Now that doesn't work either, because any of you who have tried to do that know that if you're awake and you're lying in bed, that your head goes crazy. You've got a supercomputer and you've put it in the dark and the quiet and it's not sleepy. And so it plays and it doesn't play fair. So it goes into what I call bleak crazy land. And so it goes into a space where everything goes wrong. Every little molehill that you have in your life very rapidly becomes a mountain. And the kind of thinking that you do at night is extremely depressing. It is anxiety provoking. And it is just not nice. I mean, you lie there and you think of everything terrible that you've heard on the news happening to your family. Within 10 seconds, you're trying to solve the war in Gaza and the war in Ukraine at the same time. And what do we do about this? And what do we do about that? And you're just lying there with your head going crazy. Now, if you have a mood disorder and if you are depressed or if you are anxious, then those two mood disorders are going to drive the thinking in that direction. So if you're depressed, you're more likely to have depressive thinking. And if you're anxious, you're more likely to have anxiety thinking. So we don't want you to lie in bed for hours and hours just fueling that mood disorder by thinking in that kind of zone. And a number of patients who have depression and a sleep disorder will tell me that they are so depressed by the time they wake up in the morning because of all of these thoughts that they've been having at night, that they start the day worse. And so we don't want that. So be very careful about trying to do that. And we know it doesn't work. You are not more likely to fall asleep if you just spend hours and hours lying in bed. And that's because of what I've just mentioned, the racing mind, the ruminating mind. So ruminating comes from cows who regurgitate grass and eat it again. And so ruminating thoughts are having the same thoughts over and over and over and over again, never actually solving that problem, but just rethinking over that problem over and over again. And the more you rethink about the problem, the less solving you actually do of that particular problem. It just sounds worse and worse. So there's ruminating thoughts. There are catastrophizing thoughts. So as I mentioned, every little molehill becomes a massive mountain very quickly at night. So everything becomes a catastrophe. And you kind of go like, why would you do that to yourself? Why would you lie in bed and have your head filled with awful thoughts? But there is a conflict now, like, what do I do? Because I'm trying to fall asleep, so I'll stay lying in bed. So those are the behavioral things that happen. Then there are cognitive or thinking things, perpetuating factors that keeps the insomnia going. And the big one is anxiety about your sleep. When I talk to patients who have insomnia, I'll say to them, how much time do you spend now per day thinking about your sleep? And they will tell me they're thinking about it all the time because they're aware of the consequences. So they're thinking about it. When it gets to dinner, after dinner, they really are thinking about it. But as it gets closer and closer to bedtime, they get more and more anxious about their sleep. And then I go, okay, so let's go back before you had a sleep problem. How much time did you spend thinking about sleep then? And they go, oh, nothing. Because I'd just get to the end of the day and I'd go, oh, now I need to go to bed. And so I just go to sleep. And I go, you're thinking a lot more about your sleep. And they go, yeah. And I go, is it pleasant thinking? Is it fruitful thinking? Is it worthwhile thinking? And they go, no. All it's doing is making me more and more anxious so that when I go to bed, I am really anxious about my sleep. So it's really important to notice this is something different. This is very specific anxiety. It's only about sleep and it only happens at night. This is not the same as generalized anxiety disorder where you're anxious the whole day about really nothing, just anxious. And you kind of go, I don't know why I'm anxious. I just feel anxious all the time. So I think we need to be very careful that we don't lump this type of anxiety, which is very focused about a particular problem, in the same group as generalized anxiety, because it's just not the same thing. This type of anxiety resolves very quickly if the insomnia resolves. So if we can treat the sleep and we can get them to sleep better, this anxiety disappears. So it's a very specific anxiety and doesn't necessarily need to be medicated like generalized anxiety does. So this is a thinking thing. They're going to start thinking about this. Then we have an entire list of 43 kind of statements that insomnia patients tend to make, which we call dysfunctional beliefs and attitudes. And that is ideas that people have about insomnia, which are just not true. So they go, if I don't sleep soon, I'm going to die. No, that's not going to happen. Your brain will take the sleep. So it's never going to do that. If I don't sleep, then this is going to happen. If I don't sleep, then this is going to happen. That this is causing my sleep problem. And often they're wrong. So what do we do about this kind of insomnia? So this insomnia disorder, and I'll talk more about it when I will do a podcast which looks as I've done a podcast looking at the role of medication in treating insomnia, and I'm going to do a separate podcast and looking on at the management of insomnia without medication. So I'm going to do a lot more detail. But what we do in this particular kind of situation is we need to treat this. And so let's look at treating versus solving. So if you use sleeping tablets, they work extremely well in this particular kind of insomnia. But it's not solving the problem. It's just treating it. And they treat it very well. And they're very useful in certain circumstances. But it's not solving the problem. If you want to solve insomnia, then you need to do a program called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. Now, there's lots of cognitive behavioral therapies, but this is a specific one for insomnia. So we shorten it to CBTI. The I is important. Now, you can go on to the App Store and you can find apps. There's one called CBTI Coach. There's Sleep CBTI. There's lots of CBTI apps that can help walk you through the process of CBTI. So please go and do that if that's what you think would be useful. There are psychologists who do formal CBTI sessions, and there are people like me who kind of do it, but I'm not a psychologist. So I do what's called BBTI, which is brief behavioral therapy, and that is really looking at those abnormal behaviors, changing them, and trying to get the sleep back to where it is. So that's the insomnia disorder, and we need to be very careful that we don't label that as being from depression or from anxiety, that it is an independent disorder, but also recognize that if you have depression, clinical depression, and you are put on antidepressants and there's an insomnia problem, that 6 or 9 months later, when the depression is really resolved and you're feeling really good, that you may still have insomnia, which is now not related to the depression, but actually is the self-sustaining, self-perpetuating disorder called insomnia disorder, and you may need specific treatment for that. So I hope you've got the picture. That's very chicken and egg, and it can be quite tricky to decide if one is the other. So I have patients who come and say to me, I am sure that if I sleep properly, I won't have depression. And they're not convinced that they have depression. So often I will do a little experiment with them and I will give them 5 sleeping tablets and I will say, right, take those and come and see me in a week's time and let's have another conversation. And the experiment goes as follows. If you manage to sleep well on a sleeping tablet, how do you feel in the morning? And if you feel great, and if you feel as though your life is restored and you are good to go, then you're right. The insomnia is the major reason why you have depressive symptoms during the day. But if you sleep well on a sleeping tablet and you still feel awful, your mood is still bad, then I'm right. You do have depression underlying it. So sometimes it's quite easy to see the chicken and the egg. And it's really important for doctors to listen to their patients because of that kind of problem. So it can be quite tricky. So in summary, if we look at insomnia and its relation between depression and anxiety as standalone primary psychiatric disorders can cause insomnia. But insomnia from any disorder, whether it's pain in hospital, whether it's a medical problem, whether it's restless legs, whether it's obstructive sleep apnea. So insomnia from any cause leaves you with an increased risk of depression later on. So very, very kind of circular kind of thing. Now, as I mentioned, insomnia is the most well-known of the sleeping disorders to give you mood disorders, but every other sleep disorder can also give you mood disorders. And when I say every other, I don't mean sleepwalking, sleep talking. They don't generally change sleep. They're just something that happens in the middle of sleep, but generally your sleep is normal. The other big group of sleep disorders are what we call the hypersomnia, so the excessive sleepy disorders. And that would really present as having 7 hours of sleep, but waking up in the morning feeling tired. So you're not refreshed when you start the day. And then obviously that tiredness or sleepiness continues during the day and really can range from just a brain fog that you have during the day to frankly falling asleep in meetings, in the classroom. And let's not forget the children who might have this disorder as well. Or falling asleep while driving. That's the worst scenario. So that's how these disorder presents. Now, if you have a bed partner, you may know why you're not sleeping well. So they might tell you that you are snoring or that you are battling to breathe. So, for example, there's a suspicion you might have sleep apnea. Or they might tell you that you are very restless, that you kick them all night, and that you never lie still. So you might get that history from a bed partner. The worst scenario is that you're single and you have nobody to tell you what's actually happening at night. And what happens in those situations is often because these disorders don't suddenly happen overnight. You don't suddenly have severe apnea. They kind of build up over time is that you blame it on all kinds of other things. So you might blame that tiredness on depression. We do get patients to go, I've been depressed for ages because I'm tired every morning. And I go, well, maybe you're tired from something else. And we find out, yeah, they have sleep apnea. When we treat the sleep apnea, guess what? They're not tired in the morning. So you might blame it on depression. You might blame it on lifestyle. Many young people blame it on their children when their children are little, blame it on work stress, blame it on travel, blame it on – there's all kinds of things that we blame this tiredness on. I think what's really important is to make sure that it's not because of a sleep disorder, because that's not going to resolve. These big sleep disorders that change the quality of your sleep are not going to disappear on their own. They need to be treated specifically. There's two big ones. I've done a podcast already on restless legs and the sleep part of the restless legs. So restless legs happen when you're awake. The sleep part of restless legs is called periodic limb movement disorder. And if you want to find more about that, please go listen to that podcast. The other big disorder is sleep apnea. And we've mentioned that a couple of times. So again, there's more information on the other podcasts. But basically what both of them do, as far as your sleep is concerned, is interrupt your sleep regularly during the night and regularly hundreds of times during the night. And so the next day you've had very little deep sleep. You may have had very little REM sleep. And those are the two big, deep sleeps that we have. And we need to have about 20% of our night needs to be in deep sleep and 20% of our night needs to be in REM sleep. And so we end up at the end of the night not having had enough of those because you just can't sleep if you can't breathe and you can't sleep if your legs keep twitching. And then we feel tired when we wake up in the morning. And the problem is tiredness, again, is a very – tiredness, fatigue is very vague and is difficult to pin down, and it's difficult to see it. Often, as I said, we put it down to lifestyle until we get to a point often a couple of years later where we go, actually, this is not normal. There's something else going on. And that's really important to then go to a doctor, tell them what you suspect is happening, and have a sleep study done, either a home study for apnea or a full study for leg movements. Have a sleep study done if you don't have a good history to know exactly what's happening so that it can be treated properly. But what is the relationship between these two, apart from tiredness during the day, what is the relationship between these two and mental health and mood disorders? Well, both of those sleep disorders, whether it's leg movements or sleep apnea, again, increase your risk of depression as a primary thing. They generally don't cause anxiety. So because anxiety and depression are so closely linked and they're not really two disorders, you can get anxiety with depression. The anxiety kind of fits in there. So we kind of go with both leg movements and sleep apnea increase your risk of anxiety and depression. Sleep apnea is particularly important because if you're a man and you've gone through life quite fine and then suddenly in midlife, so in the 40s to 50s, you suddenly have an episode of depression for no real reason, it's really important to check if you have sleep apnea. Because if you have sleep apnea, you are likely to get depression. That depression is likely to be more severe and is likely to be treatment resistant because sleep apnea is part of the cause of that depression. Doesn't mean that purely by treating the sleep apnea, you're going to resolve the depression, but you are likely to make the depression easier to treat. And that's always what we want. How does anxiety fit into that? As I mentioned, because it fits in with depression, that often anxiety and depression go together, but particularly in sleep apnea. Now, we go a little bit back and we say, what actually is sleep apnea? That it's a collapse of your throat. So your throat collapses in while you're asleep, and then you have to be woken up with a burst of adrenaline to wake up. Some patients who have apnea wake up with that adrenaline burst, and they're very aware of it. So they wake up at night with their heart pounding, sweating, often feeling quite anxious, and they go, what just happened? I mean, I was fast asleep and now I have this, what feels like an anxiety attack or a panic attack in the middle of the night. And that can be wrongly diagnosed as anxiety because they go, I must have anxiety because I'm like waking up in the middle of the night and I'm anxious. Not necessarily. That adrenaline surge from apnea can feel very much like anxiety. So really important, if it's only happening at night and you're waking up out of night and there's any history that you snore, please get assessed for obstructive sleep apnea. So what are the other relationships between sleep apnea, leg movements, and mood? Is that because you're tired all day, often what happens is you can't do the work that you're supposed to do. So work tends to pile up. You tend to procrastinate because you're not functioning well. That little dip that we all get in the afternoon after lunch, which should be just a little dip, becomes a massive dip and you're unable to function for an hour or so after lunch. All of that brings anxiety on because now you're not functioning properly. You're not able to do the work. You're not able to perform how you want to perform. So that all can bring on a secondary anxiety and a slow grind down of how you feel about yourself. So you start being concerned about your performance. We know that every disorder is likely to make you put on weight. So now you're putting on weight again and that makes you feel lousy. So it's not just about big disorders of depression and anxiety, but just how you feel about yourself, that you start losing self-confidence because you can't function as well as you used to function. You start getting anxious thoughts. You start getting depressive thoughts. And whether that leads to full-blown anxiety and depression, I don't know. But I do know that a lot of patients who come to see me with untreated sleep apnea and untreated leg movements don't have a good self-opinion of themselves or self-image of themselves, and that's never good for our mental health. In conclusion, sleep and mental health or mood disorders are very closely linked. If you're concerned that you may have insomnia, please get it treated. Please get it solved. Please find somebody who can do the CBTI, even if you do it on the internet. That has been shown to be just as good as seeing a psychologist but you do need to do the program. You do need to do it properly. So learn more about your sleep. Learn more about what you need to be able to fall asleep and manage the insomnia better. Don't always assume that if you treat the secondary cause of an insomnia, that the insomnia is always linked to that. Insomnia can change. It isn't always the same thing. Acute insomnia happens very early in the whole program. Chronic insomnia happens later. Insomnia disorder is not the same thing as acute insomnia, just longer. It's a different disorder and needs to be treated differently. So make sure that you manage insomnia properly so that the mood disorder, you decrease the risk of a following up mood disorder. But that it helps manage the mood disorder if the insomnia is managed. You can tell it's very tricky, right? It just all kind of moves into itself and it kind of what is there and what caused what and how it is. You just need to manage both at the same time. So they both need to be managed. If you're waking up tired every morning and you're battling to get through the day and you're feeling depressed about your work and about life and about your body image and all of that kind of thing, please make sure that you don't have a sleep disorder which is causing all of those thoughts in the morning. So in this month of mental health, please look after your mental health. Please make sure that you don't have a sleep problem which is worsening your mental health and needs to be managed properly. And please be well and sleep well. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.